Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this 31st of January, 2009. One day away, just roughly 33 and a half hours away from Super Bowl 43. We are in a new studio this morning, which has its drawbacks. I'm not going to mention them, but you'll hear them or won't hear them, I should say. But let's focus on the positive. Focus on the positive. We are in a new studio. New studio is a nice studio, but you know, I'd rather be in the old studio I was in, but that's okay. I'm here with you on this again cold and beautiful cold Saturday morning in Super Bowl 43 between the Pittsburgh Steelers and Arizona Cardinals coming up, of course, Sunday night around 6:30-ish, 6:35, depending on how long the pregame concert runs. I mean, why they have to do a pregame concert? You know, the halftime show, I can understand. You have Springsteen would be great. I can deal with that. But, you know, you've seen everybody at halftime shows at the Super Bowl, Michael Jackson, Tom Petty, whoever. Anybody, any music star that is well known has done a halftime show at the Super Bowl. But the pregame stuff is just extra. I mean, I could deal with the pregame analysis and breakdowns and something. I can only deal with so much of that. I can deal with about an hour of that, get them ready for the game to start. But again, you will have a game should kick off around 6:35. And again, I can't, you know, to say Pittsburgh is going to be in this game is nothing new. This will be Pittsburgh's seventh appearance in a Super Bowl. They've been one of the most consistent and great franchises in the NFL. But I just couldn't get my head around this whole week. The Arizona Cardinals are in the Super Bowl. Oh, my goodness. The Arizona Cardinals are in the Super Bowl with a legitimate chance to win. This is not Pittsburgh's favorite and deservedly so, but this is not a game where I can't call it a Cinderella. I think Arizona's a little bit better than that. I think Arizona still has a chip on their shoulder, and I think they are just one of these teams that has gotten hot. Yeah, it's gotten hot within the last, couple of playoff games, and has carried that momentum has just become an avalanche. Would not shock me, and I'll have my prediction. I will do my last prediction of this NFL season towards the end of the show, but it certainly wouldn't shock me if Arizona goes out there and beats Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is the better team, but when you have a quarterback at like Kurt Warner who is making his third Super Bowl appearance, has won a Super Bowl, also has lost a Super Bowl, which is an advantage as well. I mean, having Warner lose a Super Bowl and being able to convey that to the rest of his teammates saying, hey, you don't want that feeling. It is the loneliest feeling in the world as an athlete, as a football player, to lose a Super Bowl. Because the biggest thing, you can get here. You've had a great season if you get to a Super Bowl. But when you lose, the difference between a team winning a Super Bowl and losing a Super Bowl might be the greatest difference in all of sports. I mean, nobody cares about the loser in these games. I mean, it's everything is about the winners. They're talking, whether it's advertisers, whether it's, the coming up of a new superstar, whoever wins the MVP. They're talking about the new head coach being a great and the next big-time coach. You know, everybody, to the victor goes the spoils, it definitely applies in terms of a Super Bowl matchup. So nobody cares about the loser. It's all about winning in terms of this game. Not like the Final Four, college basketball. You make the Final Four, that's a great season. Even if you don't win a championship, even if you don't reach the championship, 98% of teams that make the Final Four in college basketball have had a great, great season, and they'll hang Final Four banner. They'll hang a Final Four banner more than likely in their gym, except if you're UCLA. Any other sport, again, you make the finals in just about any other sport, it's a great season. Not the NFL, for the most part. Now, if Arizona goes out there and loses this game, Arizona fans will be disappointed, but we'll still look back at this season as being a tremendous season for the Arizona Cardinals, considering where they came from. But all the attention, all the focus will be on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And when you look at this game, there are a lot of elements to this game. It's a very intriguing matchup with the coaching situation. You know, you had Wisenhunt and Russ Grimm, both of those guys probably thought that they were in line to get that coaching, to get that head coaching job for Pittsburgh when Bill Cowher retired after the 2006 season. And Mike Tomlin just comes out of nowhere as he was a coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings before before that with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers working under Tony Dungy, comes out of nowhere and gets the job. I mean, Tom, he blew the Rooneys away in the interview, and he's proven to be the right candidate. He's proven to be the right guy as he's led Pittsburgh in only his second season to a Super Bowl championship, or to being on the cusp of a Super Bowl championship, I should say. And I don't care what anybody says. I mean, Wisdom, Hunt, and Groom could polish it up all they want and say, hey, you know, things worked out the way it should, and they wanted that job. You know Wisdom, Hunt, and Groom wanted that job. And I don't blame Wisdom, Hunt. I mean, you can't sit up here and wait for the Pittsburgh Steelers to possibly maybe give you a job while another opportunity passes, while another opportunity goes by the board. Arizona came out and made the offer to him, and he took it. It was not, you know, it wasn't the greatest job, but hey, it was an NFL head coaching job, and there are only 32 of them. So those are special jobs, and Wisdom, Hunt has certainly done a miraculous job with the Arizona Cardinals, turn them into a playoff team. Towards the end of the season, they did not look like a playoff team. And he's done a great job. We helped revitalizing the career of Kurt Warner. And not enough credit has been given to Ken Wisdom for doing that. Now everybody talks about Warner and, you know, what he's done, what Warner has done to take their franchise to where it's at right now. And that's, I mean, you have to give Kurt Warner a lot of credit. I mean, Warner has played great. He has had an MVP caliber season, played great this year, and has taken this franchise, which was one of the doormat franchises in the NFL for a long time, to being on the cusp of winning a championship. But Ken Wisenhunt's job this year, especially when that team looked dead in the water, has not been recognized the way I think it should have been. And him helping out Kurt Warner and getting Kurt Warner to play to the level that he's played at has not been talked about enough, has been not talked about nearly enough. Warner, again, when Warner got to Arizona, nobody wanted Kurt Warner. I mean, he had just been basically released by the Giants. You know, he was basically keeping the seat warm for Eli Manning. Nobody expected anything out of Kurt Warner. He had an injury play four or five years or so. Nobody expected anything out of him coming to the Arizona Cardinals. But, you know, give Wisdom Hunt a lot of credit. Give him a lot of credit for getting the Arizona Cardinals, making them a tough team. This team, not only physically tough, being able to bang with teams like the Eagles and also like Carolina, who was supposedly two of the more physical teams in the league, but getting them mentally tough to be able to overcome their fall off towards the end of the season. I mean, this team looked dead at the end of the season. They looked like a clear one and done, or at most a team that would get to the divisional playoffs and then fall by the wayside. But again, Wisdom Hunt has done a tremendous job to get Arizona here and to this point. You know, Pittsburgh. They're Pittsburgh. I mean, you know, you based it on their history. Again, this is their seventh Super Bowl appearance. They only won behind a record the Dallas Cowboys holds with eight. I mean, seven Super Bowl appearances. This is the 43rd Super Bowl. You know, they're good for a Super Bowl appearance every 6 years. If only all franchises can have it that good in terms of being consistent. You know what they're going to do. You know what they want to do. They want to run the ball, stop the run. Run the ball, stop the run, and play physical defense. All right, that's who they are. That's what they've been for the past, you know, going back to the Chuck Noll days. They have not changed. That philosophy has not changed. Blue collar. You see it. Ben, you see it in Ben Roethlisberger. You see it with the entire team. And they don't have too many big stars. I mean, Roethlisberger is a star. Troy Polamalu is a star. Other than that, they don't have too many big super. They don't have flashy personalities or big superstars on that football team. Even guys like James Harrison, you know, James Farrier, Larry Foote, Lamar Woodley. I mean, this is a team that just does everything right. Just does about everything right. Of course, they're led by Mike Tomlin, who again, one of the youngest coaches in the league, has just came out of nowhere and just done. He's been a part of this new revolution in the NFL of young coaches And it seems like all these seems like the NFL is going in the direction of hiring all these young coaches. Well, he makes it hard. The Mike Tomlins of the world, the John Harbaughs of the world, they're making it tough for the old guard in terms of coaches in the NFL, because these guys are going out here making, you know, getting to Super Bowls, getting to AFC Conference Championships. Even Jim Zorn, as much as it pains me to say it, had a decent year as a first-year head coach. I mean, he was the worst out of the first-year head coaches, and he was 8-8. Look at what Mike Smith did down in Atlanta, 11-5, getting to the playoffs. So Tomlin right now leads this group, and you know he can put himself in Pittsburgh lore with a Super Bowl win tomorrow. He has a better team. He has, you know, the better team. He has a better defense. A lot of pressure on Tomlin certainly to win that game. They don't lose championships in Pittsburgh. I mean, they are 5-1 in Super Bowls. The one loss they had against the Dallas Cowboys in Super Bowl 30, they were not supposed to win that game. They ran to a Cowboy team that was in the midst of a dynasty becoming the team of the 90s. So they weren't supposed to win that game. But Tomlin has done a phenomenal job with that team. You know, you're talking about a guy who is a just flat out no nonsense, tell it like it is, straight, you know, wears his emotions on his sleeve type coach. I mean, the players know where he's coming from. There's no mystery or nothing to Tomlin. He doesn't use injuries. Doesn't use injuries as excuses. He does what he does. And that team feeds off him. They respond to him, and he definitely gets the most out of that team. That team has talent. They have very good talent. They don't have great talent. They are just extremely well coached between Mike Tomlin and Dick LeBeau. Dick LeBeau, of course, the longtime defensive coordinator with Pittsburgh, has been in the league between, you know, coaching and playing over 50 years. How he is not in the Hall of Fame is beyond me. But that's another argument for another day. But there is Dick LeBeau's defense that has certainly been a big part of why Pittsburgh is playing in a Super Bowl tomorrow. That defense has been dominant this year. And I've said on many occasions over the course of the season that is the best defense that I've seen since the 2000 Titans, pure and simple. That defense, I mean, you can't run against them. You can't throw against them. They don't give up points. They're great on third downs. Whatever stat you want to look at defensively, they have been great at, and they were tremendous last week against Baltimore, or 2 weeks ago against Baltimore, really exposed Joe Flacco for being a rookie quarterback. He's going to be a good player, but they really did a number on him, and they've done a number on offenses all season long. And they just, you know, that is the calling card of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and has been this year, is their defense. So Super Bowl 43 will be on display in Tampa Bay tomorrow. And you've had some – listen, based on the way the NFL has gone and based on how the talent has been spread out, I think that day of getting blowout Super Bowls is over. I really do. I don't think you're going to see any more Super Bowls, 56, 55, 10, you know, 42, 10. I mean, we saw an abundance of blowouts, especially during the time when the NFC was absolutely dominating the AFC. I mean, San Francisco used to just toy with Denver. The Redskins toyed with Denver once. It was a number of blowouts during that period. You know, you think about New England and Chicago, you know, with the refrigerator barely getting a touchdown in that game back in the 85 season. I think that day is done. I mean, I think that day is absolutely done. There's just too much parity in the NFL. There's just too much. The talent is balanced from the worst team to the best team. The talent gap is not that big. So you should, from here on out, get more than likely. I'm sure maybe one of these games gets away, you know, every so often. But more than likely, you should get some competitive Super Bowls in not only tomorrow, but in the upcoming years. Still to come on this special 2-hour Super Bowl preview, we will break down this game every which way we can. We'll look at the legacy of the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise. Is it the greatest? Is it the premier franchise in all of football right now? I know a lot of New England Patriot fans might differ, but I, you know, the stats and the numbers might prove otherwise. We'll also have, we'll still do NBA beat and also top stories on the other side of the break, on the other side, excuse me, on the other side of the update. NBA, you know, NBA, you have the All-Star selections were finally made in terms of the reserves. Australian Open, of course, you have Serena Williams handled taking her business this morning. Have some issues with the Australian Open. If I have enough time, I will definitely get to the Australian Open because there were a couple of things. There was one thing that took place this week that annoyed the heck out of me. I haven't been able to get it off my mind when it comes to that tournament. So I'll talk about that and much, much more. The call number, of course, is 347-215-6180. 347-215-6180. The question of the other week, excuse me, the question of the morning, I should say, is who will win Super Bowl 43? Who is your pick? And who is your pick? And when, give me a pick. Give me a score. And Pittsburgh fans, I want to hear from you. I know the Pittsburgh Nation travels. Arizona, did you honestly believe that you were going to be here? And if you're an Arizona fan, you want to call in, fine. But did you honestly believe that you were going to be, that you had a chance to be here? Even when you got to the playoffs, tell me, just be real with me. Just be real with me. Did you get a sense that you can make a Super Bowl run? So I also would like to hear from you as well. We'll have our star of the week. We have two stars. One I messed up on last week, and I will address that certainly over the course of the program. We have two automatic stars of the week. So it's not a case where it could have been voted on. It was just two no-brainers. And both of them, the ironic thing about it is both of them came to mind last night and this morning. So last night and this morning. So we'll do that. Again, we have a lot to do on this Super Bowl preview show. We'll get to the update and be right back with top stories of the week. Serena Williams has won her fourth Australian Open. She's like the San Antonio Spurs of tennis, winning Australian Opens in even an odd number of years. Of course, she won it in 03, 05, 07, and now she wins it in 2009. She defeats Denaria Safina, who, by the way, is the sister of Marat Safin, 6-0, 6-love, 6-3. Serena Williams now joins a select group of women. Only six other women's tennis players have won 10 majors. It is her, of course, her 10th major. And listen, she just her fourth Australian Open, she just toyed with Safina. Safina really never had a chance in this matchup. Once Serena Williams was able to get through that quarterfinal matchup, and I'll get to that later on, there was no way she was going to lose this tournament. Of course, early tomorrow morning, you will have number one versus number two in the men's final. Roger Federer will take on Rafael Nadal. He will try to exact some revenge on Nadal. Nadal has owned him of late, beating him in last year's French Open, and of course in that classic matchup at Wimbledon. Nadal was able to win his semifinal matchup in a 5-hour marathon against a fellow Spaniard, Fernando Navasco, in a 5-hour thriller, and it turned out to be the longest match in Australian Open history. So he will battle Federer this morning or tomorrow morning in the Australian Open final. Jason Veritek has signed a one-year deal with the Boston Red Sox worth $5 million, and the club holds an option for 2010, and also Veritek signed has a player option at $3 million if the Red Sox don't choose to keep him. NBA action. Boston Celtics have won their 10th straight game. They defeat the Detroit Pistons 86-78. Boston improves to an NBA best 39-9. Kevin Garnett leads the way with 22 points and 9 rebounds. The Cleveland Cavaliers stay perfect at home, running over the Clippers 112-95. Cleveland improves to 36-9 on the season, 22-0 at home. LeBron James goes for 25 points. The Lakers win a shootout, and they seem to win a lot of those. 132-119. Lakers improved to 36-9. Best record in the Western Conference, second best record in the league. Kobe Bryant has 30 points. Andrew Bynum continues to play well with 27 points and 15 rebounds. Golden State upsets New Orleans 91-87. Corey Maggette leads the way for Golden State with 19 points. Denver defeats Charlotte 110-99. Nene Hilario has a big game, 22 points and 12 rebounds. Denver improves to a quiet very quiet, 31-16. Like, they have played well ever since that Chauncey Billups trade. They have been one of the better teams in the Western Conference as far as their record goes. Other winners in the association include Chicago, Utah, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Indiana. Still to come on the Saturday morning wake-up call, we will talk about some top stories, some things that occurred over the course of the sports week, and we will also examine the quarterbacks of Super Bowl 43, the differences in styles and the differences in styles and what they have to do to lead their teams to the victory lane. So that's still to come, and a lot more on the Saturday morning wake-up call. The call number, again, is 347-215-6180, 347-215-6180. Talk about anything you want, but we don't really want to focus in on Super Bowl 43. Of course, top stories this week, number one, Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds has been linked to urine samples which contain anabolic steroids. And the thing about this is, this thing kind of goes on and on and on. Bonds, of course, claims that he took the cream and the clear, but had no idea that they were steroids. That he unknowingly used steroids. The urine samples, if it comes out, will say otherwise. As his urine samples contained anabolic steroids. And you had a situation where, and you also. In a situation where Bobby Esalea, a former teammate of Bonds, is willing to provide the government with evidence that Bonds knowingly took steroids. How are they going to prove that is beyond me. I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, it would be Bobby Esalea's word against Barry Bonds' word. Don't forget that Bobby Esalea was in that December 2007 Mitchell report. So maybe he's trying to get off. Trying to clear his name, trying to make himself look good, you know, with that whole ordeal. The bottom line about this, the trial, of course, Barry Bonds' trial, perjury trial, starts on March 2nd. The government, and it seems to me with this situation, that the government has nothing that's concrete on Barry Bonds. They keep digging for things, and more importantly, they keep going after Greg Anderson. After Greg Anderson, they raided his home. They raided the home of one of Greg Anderson's mother-in-law, looking for things that would like connect Bonds with steroids or illegal steroids. And the way I see it is, the government does not want the government feels like they do not have a case. The government does not have a case unless Greg Anderson testifies, because they keep coming after him. He keeps just refusing to testify. Anderson has spent, you know, years in jail not refusing to testify against Barry Bonds. And, you know, if he doesn't testify, then more than likely Bonds is going to get off. I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, I keep hearing about how they have all this overwhelming evidence and this and that. Well, if you have all this overwhelming evidence, then why are you still going after Greg Anderson? That's what I would ask. That would be my question to the government, the FBI, and you know, all the rest of the authorities that are part of this investigation. If you have just this, you know, stone cold concrete evidence, why keep going after Greg Anderson? Again, early Wednesday morning, 20 agents raided Anderson's the home of Anderson's mother-in-law. Looking for what? I mean, of course they're looking for any ties that can connect Bonds with steroids, or with, you know, or that can prove Bonds lied to the jury when he claimed that he unknowingly used steroids. And as far as the Bobby Esalera aspect of this. It's his word against Barry Bonds. I don't know how you're going to prove Bobby Esalera's testimony is going to prove that Bonds knowingly used steroids. I mean, how are you going to get it? I mean, you're going to have to put Bonds a lie detector on Barry Bonds? What are you going to give him the truth serum? What are you going to do to prove that? I mentioned it before, not like Bobby Esalera is Mr. Clean. This guy was listed as for using illegal steroids in the Mitchell report. He's one of those guys that was juiced, that was on the juice. So how would, I mean, Barnes is, you know, Barnes' lawyers is going to have a field day with that. And you know he has great lawyers. And again, I'm not trying to defend Barry Bonds. I think he's guilty. I think you can't be any more guilty than Barry Bonds. And I was a Barry Bonds fan at one point in terms of his talent. You never can question the guy's ability to play baseball. But I believe he used steroids, illegal steroids, pure and simple. I can only go by what he did, you know, after the age, you know, after the age of 35 into you know, his early 40s, which is unheard of, not only in baseball, it's unheard of in sports. A guy that had his absolute best years, had the best years of his career when he's supposed to be on the decline. It just did not add up to me until you know, I found out about the steroids. But with that said, I mean, the government right now does not, without Greg Anderson, does not have a leg to stand on. In other news, Joe Torre has co-written a book called The Yankee Years with current SI Sports Illustrated writer Tom Reducci. Of course, the book has caused a major stir in New York for what Torre has said about the Yankee organization. You know, in the book, it has excerpts calling A-Rod a fraud, where A-Rod was a fraud, talked about Brian Cashman. And listen, the Yankees, this is vintage Yankees right here. The Yankees are trying to get a confidentiality clause in the future contracts of managers and coaches that would prevent them from doing what Torre is doing right now and talking about the organization. I'm going to tell you right now, I have no problem with what Joe Torre is doing, writing the book, and what Joe Torre is doing. Zero. Okay? This organization, this man won four championships. Not one championship, four world championships with the New York Yankees in 12 years. They were in the playoffs every year. They went to the World Series six times, six times during that span, and he got treated like a stepchild on the way out. You insult him with this contract offer they made to him, the Yankee brass, and it is seven of them. George Steinbrenner is not even a factor anymore. The older George Steinbrenner, he's a name right now. He's like, he doesn't make any decisions. He's just, you know, he's like Junior Soprano. Doesn't have any pull on anything right now. He's just there. He's just there, and he's still breathing, but he's just there and he's just there in spirit and just, you know, just out there. But they made this ridiculous offer to Torre, which was an insult, for a one-year, $5 million deal. Of course, you've heard it before, $3 million in terms of incentives if he went to the playoffs, won the pennant, then won the World Series, which, I mean, they knew Torre wasn't going to take that offer. Everybody knows Torre wasn't going to take that offer. Let him say what he wants. If he wants to vent, if he wants to get it all out, whatever. I mean, I've been hearing a lot that, you know, Joe Torre should take the high road, and this is unlike Joe Torre, and he's bigger than this. I mean, so I could care less about what Joe Torre did in this organization. Look what the organization did to him. Look how they disrespected him on his way out. They basically pushed him out of the door. So now he's going to take a high road, and if he wants to make some money doing it, then what? You know what? God bless him. But I mean, he wants to go out there and try. I bet you this book becomes a New York Times bestseller. I know that. So if he wants to make some money ripping the organization, so be it. Let him do it. What this tells you is, it tells you that Torre, and again, I haven't spoken to Torre. I don't know Torre. It tells you that Torre probably wanted to be the New York. He wanted to go out on his own terms. He wanted to managed last year in Yankee Stadium. That would have meant a lot to him, and it certainly would have meant a lot to him to be the manager his last year. And it would have been his last year managing in this 09 season, bringing in the new Yankee Stadium. And he's still bothered by that. That's what this tells you. I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, he has a good gig right now in L.A., laid back. Nobody's, you know, on his, you know, led the Dodgers, of course, to the playoffs last year, did a great job with that. So he has nothing really to complain about. You know, still making a ton of money. The Dodgers are paying him $5 million a year, which is not cheap. You know, Yankees just, oh, I mean, the Yankees, his salary with the Yankees was just, you know, ridiculous. at $7 to $8 million, but he was deservedly. He was well deserved. The guy won 4 championships. But this shows you that Torrey has some bitterness, still has some bitterness towards the Yankee organization. Listen, don't expect Torrey back at old timers day anytime soon. I'll tell you that much. And if you want to get more on this, Sports Illustrated has an article, good article this week in the most recent edition called The Last Day, basically is the last day of Joe Torrey, of him managing Joe Torrey, by, of course, Joe Torrey and Tom Verducci. And, just to give you a quick synopsis of it, Torrey, it basically details the meeting Torrey had with the Steinbrenner, with the whole Yankee brass, Randy Levine, Hankenhaus Steinbrenner, Cashman was there, and a couple of George Steinbrenner was there also. The story just, they buried George Steinbrenner. Basically, said that George Steinbrenner was just repeating the end of sentences said by other people in the room. So he's like a figurehead there. And it basically details how Torrey just came in the office and, basically asked, hey, do you want me to manage? And they try to railroad him with this offer. What it tells, it gives you him and Brian Cashman's relationship and why, part of the reason why it is not a good relationship right now. Torrey, in a way, feels like Cashman kind of like not threw him under the bus, but did not stand up for him during that time period. Cashman did not say one thing during that entire meeting. Cashman didn't say a word. So I don't think Torrey was too happy about that. They've been talking buddy buddy for like the last couple of days, this past week. But there's more to it than what you heard this week. You get a sense that that is a frosty relationship right now. But the bottom line is, to me, Torrey can say whatever he wants about the New York Yankees. I don't care how the Yankees feel about it. I don't care what anybody says about, he's taking a higher role. Torrey has a right to be angry with that organization and the way they treat him. Gary Williams and Kathleen Worthington are at odds right now. Of course, Gary Williams is the head coach of the Maryland Terrapins. The team is not doing well right now. And Kathleen Worthington is the athletic director. And the big controversy with this is Gary Williams has lost a couple of recruits, one to South Florida and one to Kent State. And Kathleen Worthington did not want to release one of the recruits' name is Gus Gilchrist, of course, who was given his outright release to go to South Florida. Worthington did not want to release Gilchrist. But Gary Williams claims, hey, he was going to leave anyway, so what's the point of not releasing him? And those two went back and forth this week. Gary Williams saying, hey, she doesn't have a national championship, and Worthington again saying that she did not make the decision to release those recruits, in particular Gus Gilchrist. The bottom line is they're both right. Worthington clearly is trying to take shots at Williams' recruiting, and Gary Williams is right in terms of saying that Worthington doesn't have a national championship, because she doesn't. He has a national championship. But with that said, Williams' recruiting over the past 4 to 5 years has been nothing short of atrocious. I mean, he's in a absolute talent-rich section in being in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. There's no reason why Gary Williams should not be able to recruit quality players for the University of Maryland. I mean, that school, look at some of the guys that have, that have left, that have not went to Maryland in the past 4 or 5 years, whether it be like a Roy Hibbert, Michael Beasley, Kevin Durant, Ty Lawson, just to name a few, Jeff Green. I mean, look how many recruits that he hasn't even got his hands on. How can you be a school in the ACC, a brand new facility, and why is he not getting players? That should be the biggest question. I don't think he's forgotten how to coach. You don't forget how to coach. He's been doing it his whole life. But how he's not able to get players, I don't understand it. It is a mystery to me how he's not been able to get players in this area. It's not like he's recruiting from Idaho or Montana. This area is loaded with talent. I mean, you see, when Georgetown had a major drop off after the retirement of John Thompson, back in 1999, It did not, once John Thompson III got the job, it did not take them that long to get back into the championship mix. You know why? Because you have talent down. All you had to do was recruit the Washington, D.C., the Maryland, Washington, D.C. area, and then you're right there back in the Final Four and competing for Final Four year in and year out. So Worthington does have a point in one aspect in saying that, you know, she hasn't come out to say it, but she basically wants to say it, that, hey, the recruiting has been spotty. And it has been spotty. There's no debating that. I mean, he hasn't recruited. His recruiting has been bad. I mean, that's all there is to it. He's not getting any good players. And again, there's no reason why he cannot get good players. During the court, when Maryland, you know, there was a time where Maryland was clearly the number three program in the ACC. You had Duke, North Carolina, and Duke take turns at being one and two. And after that, it was Maryland. You know, and that was for a good, you know, that was for a good almost 10 years. Now you look at the ACC, I'm looking at Maryland. You have North Carolina, Duke, North Carolina. Then I take Wake Forest over Maryland right now. I would take, Boston College, I would take over Maryland right now. It's been a better program. Virginia Tech, which is came out of nowhere right now, is a better program. I mean, Maryland right now might be the sixth or seventh best program in the conference. I mean, they're right there, neck and neck with Miami of Florida and Florida State, which are not exactly basketball hotbeds. Clemson is a better program. Clemson is better. So the program has absolutely fallen on hard times. And again, I don't know. I mean, Gary Williams, but maybe it's time for a change. I mean, maybe Maryland, it's just not working anymore. Maybe Gary needs to move on. He's not going to get fired. The guy does have two Final Four appearances in a national championship. You can't fire him. But it might be in the best interest of him and the program for him to move on. It really might be. I would not fire him because he is Gary Williams, and he helped build that program. You know, he took what Lefty Driesell left to a whole nother level. You got to be fair about that. But he might want to think about going in another direction. I mean, it's still a great job, but it gets to a point where, you know, things might not just be, it might just be in his best interest to move on. So there you go with top stories, some of the top stories of the week. Coming up, still to come on the Saturday morning wake-up call, we will examine the quarterbacks of Super Bowl 43. These guys are polar opposites, but they have both gotten similar results. They both have Super Bowl rings on their fingers, and they both played vital roles in their team's success for winning tomorrow's game. So we'll take a look at that, as well as much, much more on the Saturday morning wake-up call, 38 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. The calling number is 347-215-6180. Again, 347-215-6180 on this Saturday, January 31st, on the Saturday morning wake-up call. We'll be right back with a couple of quarterbacks after the update. Serena Williams has won her fourth Australian Open, her 10th Grand Slam overall. She defeats Daria Safina 6-love, 6-3. Williams now joins a select company of six women to win 10 or more Grand Slams. She will also take over the number one ranking as well. Tomorrow morning, you will have Roger number one versus number two, Rafael Nadal. Will take on Roger Federer. This will be the first time that the two have met in the Australian Open final. Federer is looking to exact some revenge over Nadal, as Nadal has beaten him in the last two Grand Slam finals at last year's French Open, and of course that classic matchup at Wimbledon. Jason Veritek has signed a 1-year deal with the Boston Red Sox. The longtime catcher signs for 1 year, $5 million. Boston has a club option for 2010 as well. NBA scores. Boston wins its 10th straight game, 86-78. Boston now improves to an NBA best, 39-9 39-9, they defeat the Detroit Pistons. Kevin Garnett has a big game, 22 points, 9 rebounds. Cleveland continues its unbeaten streak at home, improving to a league-best 22-0. They defeat the Los Angeles Clippers, 112-95. Cleveland is 36-9 overall, good enough for the second-best record in the NBA. LeBron James has a big game, 25 points. The Lakers defeat the Minnesota Timberwolves, 132-119 in a shootout. The Lakers improved to 36-9. Kobe Bryant scores 30 points. Andrew Bynum has a big game with 27 points and 15 rebounds. Golden State upsets New Orleans 91-87. Corey Maggette goes for 19 points to lead the way for the Warriors. Denver continues to play well, getting past Charlotte 110-99. Denver improves to 31-16 on the season. Nene Hilario has a big game with 22 points and 12 rebounds. The call number is 347-215-6180, 347-215-6180. And, of course, as we look ahead to tomorrow's game, it basically begins and ends with the two signal calls of both teams' quarterbacks, Kurt Warner and Ben Roethlisberger. And you look at these two guys, you couldn't be any more, different than they are in terms of their style on the field. Warner is precise, accurate, passer who is the third highest rated passer in NFL history. The guy has always been one that is always near or at the top as far as completion percentage. He's a guy who does not move well. He does not move well at all. But again, when you give him time to throw the ball, he can be as good as it gets as far as placing the ball. Receivers never have to break stride when they catch the ball. Roethlisberger is just a guy who wins football games. Big physical guy, one of the toughest quarterbacks in the league to bring down. And I've never seen in all the years I've been watching football. And this is, it's a gift and a curse with this particular talent that he does have. Sometimes he does have the tendency to hold the ball too long. But the flip side of that is Roethlisberger keeps plays alive better than any quarterback that I've ever seen. He has made that offensive line look average. That offensive line is not a good offensive line, but he has made them look average by his ability to keep plays alive. He allows his receivers to get open. When you get a hold of him, you better tackle him and wrap him up. He is 6'5", 240 pounds. I've seen him break more tackles probably than any quarterback in the NFL this season. And the guy has a knack. He has a knack for keeping plays alive. He has a knack for getting big third downs, and he has a knack for fourth quarter comebacks. Roethlisberger has he's a poor man's John Elway. He has a little John Elway, even a little Donovan McNabb in him. He's a guy that will get you. He's going to get you to the end zone. You don't know how he's going to get you there, but he's going to get you to the end zone. He is absolutely clutch. He is absolutely clutch in the fourth quarter. He is a guy that can take you 90 yards in 15 plays with 2 minutes left on the clock in a heartbeat. He's not going to blow you away with stats. He's not going to blow you. He doesn't have the 95 quarterback rating. He doesn't have too many games where he has throws for three or four touchdown passes or throws for 300 yards. But all he does is win football games. He's won more games, 51 games in his first 5 seasons. He's the fastest quarterback ever to get to that number. And it started when he was a rookie in his rookie season. In his rookie season, when he came in started out 13-0 and has not looked back. For injured Tommy Maddox, he has not looked back since then. Went 15-1 that year, and of course lost to Tom Brady in the New England Patriots in that AFC Championship game. But he has not looked back. Did not play well in the last Super Bowl. And don't think that he does not remember that. He did not play well, threw a couple of interceptions, had one return for a touchdown. But the thing people forget about that whole ordeal is, though he didn't play well in the last Super Bowl, he was great in that AFC Championship against the Denver Broncos in Denver. where he had a big-time game. They would not have won that game if it was not for his performance. So people, he gets criticized for not playing well in the Super Bowl, but listen, they wouldn't got to, they would not have gotten to the Super Bowl for not his performance, if not for, for not his performance in that AFC Championship. I mean, you can't, I don't know who I would get the edge to with this matchup. It's very, I guess it depends on, you know, I think I would lean towards Roethlisberger because I think everything has to be perfect for Kurt Warner to succeed. I mean, he has to get perfect. He has to get great blocking, pass protection. He has to, obviously he has big time receivers. Everything has to be perfect. He's not going to win an ugly game. Roethlisberger can win a game 16-10 and throw two interceptions. Roethlisberger can win a game where he does not play well. I'm not sure. I don't think Kurt Warner can win a game. Or Arizona can win a game where Kurt Warner does not have does not play at top level. And again, Roethlisberger is a guy who can go through three quarters looking as bad as you can, as bad as a quarterback can look. But in that fourth quarter, he can absolutely win a game and just light your defense up. So if I had to lean towards one of them, I would lean towards Roethlisberger, but it is not a big edge. I did not give him, it's not like, well, Pittsburgh has advantage at quarterback and clear cut. No. You know, Kurt Warner is a guy who has been, this would be his third Super Bowl appearance. He's been on the winning side, he's been on the losing side, so he has great experience, and he's not, Kurt Warner can take a hit. That's one thing about both these guys. Both these guys have chins like Rocky Balboa. And these guys, you knock them down, they get back up, and continue to make plays. They're not going to be fazed by a pass rush. They're not going to be fazed by getting hit. And, I mean, that's all it is. Kurt Warner took a beating. He took a beating in that Super Bowl. In that Super Bowl when New England upset, defeated the Rams back in that 2001 season. He took a beating. Had an interception return for a touchdown. Threw another interception, but. You know, in the fourth quarter, had a great fourth quarter, threw for 300 yards in that game, and put the Rams in a position to win the game. But New England was able to, of course, kick that game with a field goal by Adam Vinatieri. But Warner is as tough as they come. They're not going to, and he's going to have to be tough in this game to withstand that Pittsburgh pass rush. So you look at those two guys, and you look at their journeys in these two guys' careers. I mean, Roethlisberger has been almost like the prodigy, so to speak, getting off to the fast start in his career, making the playoffs every year in his career with the exception of the 2006 season. He's been in the playoffs every year. He was drafted in the first round, was well-known coming out of college, and basically has been a star basically from the start up until now. Warner, on the other hand, was a guy who 10 years ago about – you know, back in 1994, 95, was bagging groceries, okay? This guy was bagging groceries, playing in Arena League. I mean, there's no way. I mean, when Kurt Warner came out and broke out that 1999 season with the Rams, nobody knew who he was. I mean, so I remember that Sports Illustrated cover that says, who is this guy? And that's exactly right. Who is this guy? And he went on to have one. His story is one of the great stories in NFL history. That's all there is to it. This guy can go from a real league to go from bagging groceries to being on the real league team. Trent Green gets hurt in preseason, and now this guy is going to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, that's all there is to it. He's on the cusp of taking the Arizona Cardinals to their first Super Bowl championship. I mean, they don't even write this stuff in Hollywood. And Warner is a guy who is really. When you look at him, when you look at his career, he's really had three different careers. I mean, he had that great stretch of play from 99 to 2001 where the Rams were as good offensively as any team has ever been in a three-year period. I mean, 500 points every year. They were on pace in that 2000. He was on pace in that 2000 season before he got hurt against Kansas City to break every passing record known to man. I think if you combine his stats with Trent Green's stats, I think they did break the yards. They did break record for yards and also touchdowns when you combine their stats for what they did. They scored over 500 points three straight years. They did it. I mean, offensively, it was just, like you said, the greatest show on turf. They did everything that an offense can do. And then after that, he loses the Super Bowl in 2001, took a beating in that game. hurts his, you know, hurts his thumb the following season, and was never the same for the next. Basically, he had 5 years from 2002, from 02 to 06, where you almost forgot he was in the league. You know, he loses his job to Mark Bolger. He gets to the Giants, you know, and basically was there to keep Eli Manning's seat warm. And, you know, the Giants get rid of him. Eli Manning comes in the 04 season. He joins Arizona in 05. Again, he was supposed to be just a guy who was kind of grooming Matt Leinart for Leinart to be their franchise quarterback. Had a good season in 06 and becomes a starter. Ends up starting in 07, has taken over from there. His guy's made over 30 straight starts. He beat out Leinart fair and square, beat Leinart out thoroughly to take that job, and has made people, that's a story that people have forgotten about in terms of Super Bowl. There are two stories that have been forgotten in terms of this Super Bowl. I'll mention one of them later on, but that Matt Leinart is where have you gone, Matt Leinart? Matt Leinart was supposed to be the franchise quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals, but then has gotten his job just taken by Kurt Warner. So that is something to think about. But Warner, you know, just keeps plugging away. 37 years old. Again, he still throws. He's still one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league. I mean, he's still the guy. He throws one of the prettiest balls in football. That's all there is to it. I mean, he throws a great football. And again, if you're a receiver, you love playing for him because he does not hang you out there to dry. I know you had the one ordeal with Anquan Boldin back against the Jets, where Boldin almost got his head taken off. But that was more of a one time thing. I've never seen for Kurt Warner in terms of him not, you know, putting his receiver out, leaving his receiver out there. But again, I don't know who you. I mean, you get a slight edge in Roethlisberger, but you can go either way with this. You can go either way with in terms of these guys. But neither one of them, I'm saying, neither one of these teams would be here if not for either one of these guys. They both turned into great quarterbacks in their own right, and both of them are playing for a legacy right now. Roethlisberger can join a select group. He can join a select group with a select group of players. With a quarterback, with a win tomorrow, Roethlisberger is trying to become only the fifth quarterback to win two Super Bowls before the age of 30. And look at it, look at this list. It's just a who's who. It's an absolute who's who list of players. We talk about guys like Tom Brady, who has three before the age of 30. By the way, talk about Tom Brady, Terry Bradshaw, Joe Montana, and Troy Aikman. You can't beat that list when it comes to quarterback. You can't beat that list when it comes to all-time great quarterbacks. And with Kurt Warner, and he clearly, if Roethlisberger wins this game, he clearly to me would be the second best quarterback, the third best quarterback in all of football. You still have to put Brady and Manning ahead of him. Still have to put Brady and Manning ahead of him, of course, and you still have to put Brady and Manning ahead of him in terms of the quarterback pecking order. But he clearly puts himself in that class. I don't think there's any question about it. And after those three, there would be some separation between the next guy. So Roethlisberger certainly is playing for history, trying to join Terry Bradshaw in terms of becoming the second Pittsburgh quarterback to win multiple Super Bowls. A lot on the line for Ben Roethlisberger in this game. Kurt Warner is just gravy. I mean, Kurt Warner, if he loses this game, it's still, he's going to the Hall of Fame. There's no question about that. But if he loses this game, he's not going to get criticized if he loses this game. But if he wins this game, this will just, for him to take this franchise, this doormat franchise to a Super Bowl would be one of the great individual accomplishments, I think for any NFL player in recent memory. I mean, this franchise, he is not blessed with great talent around him. As far as, I'm talking about as a complete football team. He has great receivers, yes, But those receivers don't mean anything if your offensive line is not any good, and especially if you don't have a running game. And for the most part, their offensive line is average at best, not bad, but not great. And their running game has been a non-factor for most of the season. They've had two good playoff games. They've had two good playoff games in terms of what they did against Atlanta, Carolina, and did a decent job against the Eagles. But for the most part, Arizona uses their run to set you up. They're not trying to. They use their run to keep you honest. They don't use their run. Their running game is not a weapon. It's absolutely not a weapon. It's not a weapon. So, Kurt Warner, you're talking about an average running game, an average defense. I was ranking, 19th over the course of the season. And he takes his team to a Super Bowl. So, he wins this game. Like I said, it's one of the great accomplishments by any quarterback in NFL history. There's no getting around it. I mean, people talk about John Elway all those years of dragging those Denver teams to the Super Bowl and then finally losing. This would be similar. This would be better, because even if he wins the Super Bowl, this would be better than that as far as I'm concerned. Because he does not have great all-around talent around him. This team is not a – the Arizona Cardinals were not built this year to be a Super Bowl. They were not a Super Bowl caliber team over the course of the season. Anybody who believes that, I don't care if you I don't care if you go back to the days of when Dan Beardorff played for the team. They were not built to be a Super Bowl caliber team. So it would be a tremendous accomplishment for Kurt Warner to go out there and pull off the upset. And it would be an upset. It wouldn't be a big upset, but Pittsburgh is favored by 7. They deserve to be favored. And it would still be an upset if they were to go on to win this game tomorrow. Still to come on this Super Bowl preview special, 2-hour special Super Bowl preview show. We're almost at the top of the hour in terms of 10 o'clock, just a couple minutes away. We will look at the roads that these two teams took to get here, turning points in their seasons, and we also look at, again, the legacy of the Pittsburgh franchise. Is it the best franchise in pro football? We will answer that question. Also, we still have NBA beat, a little college basketball, and, again, my prediction on my final prediction of the Super Bowl, my final NFL prediction of the season. So we have that and much, much more on the Saturday morning wake-up call. 1 hour down, basically 1 hour down, one to go. You can still hit the phone lines at 347-215-6180. Again, 347-215-6180 on the Saturday morning wake-up call. We will be right back after this update. Serena Williams has won her 4th Australian Open, defeating Dinaria Safina 6-love, 6-3. It is Williams' 10th major of her illustrious career. Williams is only the 6th women's player in all in history to win 10 or more majors. She also takes over the number one spot in women's tennis. Roger Federer will take on Rafael Nadal tomorrow morning in the final of the men's final. Nadal was able to get by Fernando Nolasco in a 5-hour match. A match that took 5 hours. Federer is just working on it, has had a couple of days off. Federer is looking to exact some revenge on Nadal. He has defeated Nadal. Nadal has defeated Federer in back-to-back finals, back-to-back Grand Slam majors. Of course, that classic match they had at Wimbledon when Nadal won and ended Federer's five-time defending champion streak on grass. So that will take place, of course, tomorrow morning at the Australian Open. Jason Gerchek has signed a one-year deal with the Boston Red Sox. 1 year, $5 million. The club holds an option for 2010, and Gerchek also holds a $3 million player option as well. NBA action. Boston improves to 39-9 with a 86-78 victory over the Detroit Pistons. Boston has now won 10 straight games. Kevin Garnett goes for 22 points and 9 rebounds. Cleveland defeats the Clippers 112-95. Cleveland improves to the second best record, 36-9. Cleveland starts off the season 22-0 at home. They have the best record in the league, best home record in the league. LeBron James goes for 25 points in the win. The Lakers win a shootout against Minnesota Timberwolves 132-119. Lakers improved to 36-9. Kobe Bryant scores 30 points. Andrew Bynum has a big game with 27 points and 15 rebounds. Golden State upsets New Orleans 91-87. Corey Maggette goes for 19 points. Denver gets by Charlotte 110-99. Hilario has 22 points and 12 rebounds. Denver continues to play well and improves to 31 and 16 on the year. Still to come on the Saturday morning wake up call. We will talk about the legacy of the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise. Is it the best franchise in all of professional football? We'll talk about that. We will also, again, I still have our prediction on the game that is still to come. NBA beat. The All Stars have come out. The All Star reserves have, of course, been announced this past week. A little college basketball, and maybe if I have enough time, some Australian Open as well. That's still to come on the Saturday morning wake-up call. The call number is 347-215-6180, 347-215-6180. Stay with us on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Welcome back. Hour number two of the Saturday morning wake up call. 2 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, 1 hour down and one to go. As we preview Super Bowl 43, which will be coming up tomorrow, of course on NBC. Sure, kickoff should be about 6:30, 6:35, depending on how long the pregame concerts run. Like I said before, I don't know why they have these pregame concerts. They're not needed at all, but they want to. It is a show. I mean, the game is the game, but the Super Bowl has become a national event. And again, it will be, without question, it will be the number one rated program all season long. Not the Oscars, not the Golden Globes, not the last episode of Seinfeld. The Super Bowl will be the number one rated program in 2009. You can bet the house on that one. You can certainly bet the house on that. As far as how these teams got here, and listen, I'm not shocked. And we have a special guest joining the program. We'll click on and see who's this special guest. Yes, you are on the air.
Hello, Cyril. This is Stacey.
Stacey, how are you doing? If our callers and listeners don't know, you should know if you listen to Internet Block Radio. Stacey on Sports Course has her program on Monday. It's 11 p.m., right? Let me get the time right.
Yeah, that's exactly. Well, you know, any time with Block Talk Radio, that's what's so fabulous about it, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You can do what you want, say
yes,
what you want, and do it for free.
Why not?
Before I get into the journey that these two teams took to get here, from what I understand, again, correct me if I'm wrong, you and your husband were at the AFC Championship game a couple weeks ago.
Oh, we were. You have to excuse me. I'm a little congested from being at all of these outside Steelers playoff games. But yes, we were. I mean, we're a season ticket holder, so
wow.
We were at the
AFC Championship
game. You know what? It really is a wonderful thing because so many. I mean, the waiting list for season tickets is extensive, as you could
That's
probably
ridiculous.
Imagine in Steeler Nation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you know,
I'm just lucky to have. you know, when my husband had them within his family. So, of course, I'm not a native Pittsburgher at all. But when I moved here, I was able to walk into a very nice situation. So, yes, we were at the championship game and the divisional playoff game. And it was cold. I'll tell you
what.
Yeah.
It was worth it, though. You were cold. I mean, it was worth it. There are ways to keep warm in those elements. I'm not. There are ways to keep warm. Trust me.
Absolutely. You know what, Cyril? The security does not do a great job of patting you down when you have your flask.
Yes, you can hide. Places. You can hide some liquids.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So I'm sure it was a great environment. How is that now? I've been to the previous stadium, Three Rivers, not Three Rivers.
Uh-huh.
I've been there once. I've never been to Heinz Field. How's that stadium from a fan's perspective to sit in?
Well, it's pretty good. You know, we always say that we wish that they would have closed it off like a Three Rivers or like a Veterans Stadium where it was, you know, the old school.
Yeah, yeah, cookie cutters. Cookie cutters.
Well, the reason why is that there could be so many more seats there and it could be even louder because, I mean, we can make it loud there, but when you have that enclosed stadium, it kind of, you know, reverberates, you know, all throughout the fans and the field. So from that perspective, you know, we really wish that they would have closed it off and put more seats. But other than that, it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous stadium. Yeah.
And I'll say that thing. You were spending about 31 NFL kickers as well. Yeah, that stadium is impossible. If it is not Jeff Reed or Adam Vinatieri, that stadium is impossible to kick in. Especially when you get past 45 yards and beyond, forget it. I mean, you better trust your kicker. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely, you're taking a chance. That's for sure. You know, and you better trust your defense. Is what you better trust.
Exactly. More importantly, yes, you better trust your defense even more than your kicker. Definitely. I've seen one guy. And it just shows you, again, how lucky this franchise has been, how fortunate they've been. I saw one guy in there in a big spot make a 50-yard field goal there. That was Adam Vinatieri back in, I think it was, I believe, I forgot the game. I want to say it was the 2004 AFC Championship, but it might have even been a regular season game. But I know it was a 50-yard field goal. And I said, you know what? The Patriots are just, I mean, they're just lucky. Like, nobody makes field goals in that stadium from that distance, but Adam Vinatieri.
Yeah, it's few and far between when you're making 50-plus at Heinz Field. But I think Jeff Reed's long there is 52.
Yeah, he's kicked one.
Not many can do that. So it depends on which end you're at, just like with any stadium.
Yeah,
you know, when you're at the Meadowlands, the swirling winds, and
they're impossible.
Right. But
you were going to say something?
No, I was just gonna turn it right on over to you.
What is your take on the game? I know you have to like Pittsburgh, but what is your overall take on this game coming up tomorrow?
Well, it's an interesting matchup, I think. Obviously rooting for Pittsburgh all the way. But if I take a step back and try and look at it objectively, you know, it's really a matter of whether or not Pittsburgh's defensive line can get the push on the Cardinals' offensive line and bother Kurt Warner and disrupt his quick release and the passing routes. I mean, that's really, I think, going to be the major factor in the game. I think that a lot of people aren't familiar with Pittsburgh's defensive line. I mean, everybody's familiar with James Harrison, and he seems like he's a lineman, of course, rushing off the edge the way he does.
He's a hybrid.
He's a linebacker, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but he does play the outside linebacker position. But Aaron Smith and Casey Hampton are going to come up really big, and those are some defensive linemen that, I mean, as some people do, no, Casey Hampton, because, I mean, he's really hard to miss. He's huge.
He's a big guy.
Yeah. You know what? It's really funny. When we're at the games and we're trying to, or and they're, like, doing their substitutions, and Casey Hampton is trying to get off the field, I mean, he'll walk off the field, and it drives me nuts. I will be like, you know what, you're going to have 12 men on the field, dude. Hurry up, get off.
Yeah, he's like, me, 13, he's like an extra man. Two men, he's like,
I know.
He's
got
a big
F man on there. Yeah, I mean, he's really big, and, you know, obviously, as the nose tackle, his job is to soak up and take up and absorb the blockers, the offensive linemen, so that he can free up space for the blitzers or for the free rushers. And so he's going to come up really big, especially because Kurt Warner is not that nimble.
He can't move
laterally, you know, he can't move from side to side. But you'll see in a lot of his tape that he can step up. He can step up very quickly.
He's very good at
just moving up in the pocket. And so if they can get that middle of the line to get that push into the backfield a little bit, it's going to make him very uncomfortable. And he is a fumbler, you know. So
Listen, I'm telling you, and I'm glad you – that's a great point that you bring up. And I mentioned it earlier during the program. Okay. He hurt his thumb back in that 2001 season, the last season the Rams were in the Super Bowl. And it carried over onto that following season, and that thumb is still it's still shaky. I mean, you hear that. I mean, maybe it's not as bad as it was, but he, like I said, I think that he was not a fumbler before that injury. After that injury, he has put the ball on the ground outside of Dante Corbett, the ball on the ground as much as any quarterback in the league. So he has a great point. He is prone to fumble. He can take a hit. Now, I think he will get back up. He can take a hit, but he is prone to put the ball on the ground. You hit that hand. He is prone to fumble. So that's an excellent point.
Right. So that's what I feel like is the job for the Steelers. They have to really make him uncomfortable. And if any defense in the league can make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Number two, it's Baltimore. Number one, it's Pittsburgh, as they showed in the championship game. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, really. So I am. I'm looking forward to it. And of course, you're always looking at the explosive offense matchup with a top rated. I'm going to get you. I don't care what you're doing. Defense. So that's going to be exciting to watch.
And I mean, to piggyback off that, in history, when history says, you know, again, I'm not a Pittsburgh fan per se. I'm even from the state of Pennsylvania. I don't know what I was thinking not to become a Pittsburgh fan. They have been, and I will mention it later in the program, they have been the premier franchise. They are the premier franchise in the NFL, and I will tell everybody why. Those of you from Boston and New York, I'll tell everybody why they're the premier franchise. But it's gonna come down to that matchup. Their defensive line, that front seven against the Arizona offensive line. Because the thing is, Arizona cannot be one dimensional, and I also think Arizona has to establish a running game. Not so much for the yardage, but the carries. They cannot. You can't leave Kurt Warner. You can't make Kurt Warner a target, because he'll get teed off. They will tee off on Kurt Warner all day. They make him target, get that pass rush.
Right. And you know, both Edgerrin James and Hightower are only not even averaging 4 yards a carry in the playoffs.
Right.
So they are trying to just run the ball. I mean, we have to remember Ken Whisenhunt is a student of Bill Cowher. You know, he was an offensive coordinator. Obviously, it's well documented that he was an offensive coordinator here in Pittsburgh for 6-7 years. It's really something that I think is ingrained in him. I mean, he has his trick plays, and he has this, and he has that, and he's always cooking.
No, he's a disciple. Like you said, he's a Bill Cowher disciple.
Right, but he's going to run the ball, but again. It's just gonna be so fun to watch. I'm so interested
to see how
the defense handles it. Yeah,
it really is. I had to basically eat my words, because a couple programs ago, I said that I asked a question to the audience. I posed a question to the audience saying that which team would you not want to see in the Super Bowl? And I said that it was on the Cardinals, because I just didn't think that they were physical enough to either deal with a Pittsburgh or even a Baltimore. And I was absolutely dead wrong. Now, I would not want to see them against Baltimore, per se. I just didn't like that matchup. Not so much that Baltimore would beat them or destroy them. It had really no storylines. Some matchups you don't want to see in Super Bowl based on the lack of stories. This one has, this is like a soap opera. You have Whisenhunt, and I talked about it earlier, you have Whisenhunt and Grimm being beaten out by Thomas, who came out of nowhere to take that job. You know, LeBeau, Whisenhunt, that matchup, Todd Haley, the LeBeau matchup. A lot of things, you know, you had the contrast in styles with the quarterbacks. There's a lot. I mean, it's endless storylines with this matchup. Talk and stick to that thing. Talk about, and they can say all they want, Wisenhunt and Roethlisberger, because, you know, they're playing buddy-buddy now. Same taking the high road, which they should. But that's not a good relationship. I mean, you from a customer perspective, what was that relationship like? How did it end? What happened with that?
Well, you know what? It was really, I mean, they hid their the tension of the relationship pretty well while he was here. And, you know, he was only here for three years with him. So
right.
There was a lot of, Roethlisberger, he was a rookie and he was macho and naive, you know. And
yeah, immature,
and
very immature.
Yeah, as ignorant as any rookie would, you know. Oh, I
right.
win, I want to throw, I want to sling it here, I want to sling it there. And
right.
that is just not what, number one, Pittsburgh football is really about.
No,
and
no.
number two, you can't do that. I mean, you're not familiar with the exotic defenses you're going to see. You're not familiar with your receivers yet. So there was some back and forth on that point, on him wanting to be more in control of the plays that were called. And that's why he gets along a lot with Bruce Arians, who here in Pittsburgh, even though they're in the Super Bowl, a lot of people don't necessarily like him as an offensive coordinator. But he allows Roethlisberger a little more freedom, a little more control over the play calling. And so, you know, I don't know if it ended well between Wisenhunt and Roethlisberger, but I know that they just kind of are, you know, they're just, like you're saying, taking the high road on this when
right.
the questions are asked about their relationship. But, yeah, I mean, they've had their moments. They had their moments, you know. It was like a it was like a rocky relationship, you know. I mean, they did have their times when they didn't agree on things, and they did let it show, and I guess they worked it out. But hey, here we are now, you know.
Well, I mean, I like Roethlisberger a lot. And like I said earlier in the program, he is on the cusp of doing something that only five other quarterbacks in the NFL has ever done, winning multiple Super Bowls before the age of 30. It does not happen that often. And I think that he, again, he's a guy who you want to, he's clutch. I mean, like I say, he has a little John Elway in him. I think he has, I mean, that's a bold comparison. But yes, he's a winner. He knows how to make the right play at the right time. He's not going to wow you with the stats. The guy just knows how to do it in clutch situations. But he was, you know, like you said, he was very immature early in his career. I mean, he had problems with Cowher. He was calling out Bill Cowher after he won a Super Bowl, talking about the offense and, you know, criticizing Cowher, saying that we were kind of like, we weren't free enough. And in 2006, you know, and then you have the season you had 2006 where he basically gets his head knocked off. I know he was coming off the motorcycle accident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure he wanted Bill Cowher then when he was getting knocked all over the place and couldn't run the ball, he couldn't do anything like that year offensively when they missed the playoffs. So, but he has grown up, but then he has had those moments of immaturity. I mean, the motorcycle accident. I mean, geez, why the motorcycle helmet? I mean, motorcycles have ended careers of some prominent athletes within the last 5-6 years. I don't know if these guys ever learned, but, you know, that's a whole other story. But he has matured. I would say this. I'll be shocked if he doesn't play a good game. If he doesn't play much better than what he did back in Super Bowl 40. He was a second-year player. I expect him to have a pretty good game against that Arizona defense. There will be a lot of plays to be made against Arizona secondary, I can tell you that.
Absolutely. I think that that's going to be one of the second most interesting battle to watch is Big Ben and how he's going to handle the enormity of the Super Bowl this time around. Yeah, I mean, he had the worst passer rating for a Super Bowl
winning quarterback
right. ever. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be very interesting to see how he's going to match up against the corners because they're young, right? They're young.
Yes,
they're
young.
And then you have some, like, in Santonio Holmes. I mean, he's not old or by any means, but, you know.
He's very good. Very good player.
Very good and deceptively good, I think.
I think
that it's a lot of people don't feel like he is, you know, he has grown into what he, a first-round pick that he was. But you know what? He's not just sitting back and smoking his stuff, you know?
He had some moves, but hopefully that's behind him. But
he's stepping up.
Yeah, he definitely has.
He's been stepping up in the past few games, especially in the playoffs. I mean, big punt return for a touchdown. Maybe we'll see one of those in the Super Bowl. That's never happened.
That was a big – that game, that play was huge. That, I don't mean to cut you off there, but that play, I thought, you know, San Diego was up 7-0 in that game. San Diego had, you know, coming off that Indianapolis win, they come out 7-0 right away. That punt return was big. I think people realize how big that punt return was in terms of changing that momentum and stabilizing that game. It was huge.
I'll tell you what, when San Diego marched down that field, when the Steeler, I mean, we were sitting there in Heinz Field, and the air was sucked out of that stadium right into the river. I mean, it just was sucked out of that stadium. Everyone's turning around and looking at each other like, did our defense show up? I mean, what the hell was that?
Yeah,
it was unbelievable. And you know what? Not for nothing, but I think Phillip Rivers is one of the cockiest players that plays the game. And there's a fine line between confident and cocky.
He's very arrogant.
And there's some players you just do not want to see do that to your team. And honestly, he's one of them. You know, coming from the biased Pittsburgh fan side.
I understand what you're saying completely.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just really one of those guys that you just want to say, you know what, somebody's going to knock you down a notch. And I think in the end, that's what happened. But, yes, Antonio Holmes, huge in bringing Mr. Moe, Uncle Moe, back to the Pittsburgh sideline. That literally deflated the fans because we were rowdy in the beginning. And then we were thinking about Jacksonville from last year. All the teams that had the bye this year lost their first game. And so it really was one of those kind of like, oh, no, what's going to happen? So it really was a nice turning point for the Steelers.
Speaking of receivers, how is Hines Ward and his whole the need in that situation?
Well, it seems he's going to play. I mean, who's not going And obviously, everyone knows he does have a tough guy image. I mean, this is just what Hines does. You know, he gets hurt, who cares? You know, inject me with whatever you got to inject me with. Hyperbaric chamber in my hotel room, that's fine. I'm going to make it happen. So that's why the city really embraces him, is because he just does it. You know, he's like the Nike motto epitomized. I mean, that's what he just does. He goes out there and he plays. You know, in Super Bowl 40, and this is well documented as well, but, you know, he was hurt.
Shoulder, right.
Days beforehand. He's walking around in slings on the Thursday and Friday and Saturday. And so he made it happen, and look what came out of that.
MVP, that big game. Yeah.
You know, that's like by default, I think, because, I mean, nobody played well in that game.
He played well. I mean, he was the best player on the field, but, you know, it's a bias award towards the quarterback. If Roethlisberger had been average, if Roethlisberger had, let's say he had no touchdowns, no interceptions, he would win MVP that game. That's just how it is in the Super Bowl. I mean, I saw Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl MVP in that year when they upset the Rams. There's no way he was the MVP of that game. It was Ty Law was the MVP of that game. But they want to give it to the quarterback, so the quarterback basically has to just give the award away for them, or somebody else has to have just a ridiculously great game, running back, wide receiver, what have you, defensive player, in order for the quarterback not to win it. So I can understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
What is the difference? And Pittsburgh, and I was looking at this a few weeks ago when I was preparing for the Baltimore Pittsburgh game, so I was looking to that matchup. And cumulatively, those have been the two best defenses, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, over the last decade. Baltimore won, Pittsburgh 2 yards, points, and all, you add up all those stats. But so Pittsburgh's always had defense. But what is this defense? I think that this is the best defense I've seen since the 2000 Ravens. There was a time you could never run against Pittsburgh, but now you can't even throw against them. Why has that been the case this year? What are the differences as far as what you've seen this year as compared to past years when you could throw all over them if you couldn't, despite not being able to run against them?
Well, I think one of the number one factors is that their cornerbacks have gotten better. They've gotten older. They've gotten smarter. Ike Taylor and Brian McFadden are there, and, of course, Deshae Townsend is the veteran guy, but Brian McFadden is someone who was a high-round pick in the draft, and he showed flashes of really of being a shutdown corner. I mean, you don't hear his name called a lot because people don't really throw against him. They'll go against Ike Taylor a lot. Excuse me. And you'll find that Ike Taylor does a great job now of staying with the receivers. He doesn't bite as much on the play fakes or the double pumps. He doesn't do those kind of things anymore. And then you have the presence of course, Polamalu, who's been there for several years now. But when you add Ryan Clark into the mix, and then you also have the defensive line that gets pressure with bringing, like, four guys. I mean, they get the pressure. They can all drop back. The linebackers can all drop back if they're not doing some exotic blitz into coverage. And so it's very hard to know where the defenders are going to be for the opposing quarterbacks. And so that's what causes confusion. That's what allows Polamalu to freelance a little bit and get his picks. You know, coming right. But I mean, Ed Reed, if he didn't go on that run of getting, four picks.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Polamalu would have the league lead in interceptions.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that about Polamalu. Polamalu to me, and again, I'm in the D.C. Baltimore, D.C. Maryland area. So, I love Ed Reed. I think Ed Reed's he's right now would be a Hall of Fame player. He's had a just phenomenal career. But Troy Polamalu, for my money, is the best all-around safety in the league because there are no weaknesses to him. Not only can he do the things in coverage, you saw that interception he had against Baltimore, the Clemson game, but people don't realize that guy is like having an extra linebacker when he goes up to stop the run. I mean, he crushes anything when he moves up to run stopping. He's like Bob Sanders in terms of that. So there's nothing I don't know if Ed Reed can do is on that level per se in terms of stopping the run. So to me, Polamalu is the best. I would take him over Ed Reed right now. It's really close, but I would have to take him over Ed Reed as being the best all around safety in football.
Right, absolutely, and he's pretty amazing. Being here in Pittsburgh, I don't know if the national audience sees this a lot, but he prays constantly. I don't know if you noticed that, but before and after every play, he does a little prayer, and he touches his chest, and it's really, he's very balanced, and not only in terms of his play, but as a human being. He's very balanced and grounded and spiritual, and he brings that. It enables him, I think, to have this unbelievable, almost unbridled passion when he comes to play. You know, do you see how when he's coming up, and Joe Flacco, they were going for it on 4th and inches. Joe Flacco is a beast of a quarterback.
He's big. He's 6'6", 230. He's a big guy.
Yeah, he reminds me of Roethlisberger in a lot of ways.
Right, he does.
In terms of his stature. And so that's a big guy. Polamalu is not necessarily a big guy, you know.
No.
He just knows how to use his body. He leaped over, timed his leap perfectly, and leaps over and catches him at the point of attack. And they did not make it. They did not make it. He is phenomenally athletic, and not even athletic. And this just sounds funny, but he's like a gazelle. He's graceful. You know, look at that interception he had.
He had two of the greatest interceptions I've ever seen in my life. That Charger interception, the earlier Charger game, and that interception he had back in the divisional playoffs when they upset Indianapolis. Those are two of the best interceptions I've ever seen in my life. You remember that one, right?
Oh yeah, the one that they took away.
Right, the one they took. Yeah,
right.
Oh my goodness, that's one of the worst calls in their history. Oh my goodness.
People had heart attacks here in Pittsburgh. I'm not even joking. They had heart attacks. That was one of the craziest games
because Pittsburgh outplayed them by so much. It shouldn't have been that close. The play, the Roethlisberger play he made to stop the interception return for a touchdown, the fumble return for a touchdown. Yeah, that was crazy. That was a crazy game. Vanderjagt.
You knew they were destined at that point.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, you knew they had to be destined to survive that. Jerome Bettis is freaking out. You should have seen my in-laws' house. It was like insane. I mean, there were paths worn out in the rug, or pacing back and forth, and people on their knees, and like not even being able to believe what they were seeing. It was insane. It was just the most insane game I ever saw.
Well, Stacey, I want you to stay with me here because I'm kind of not gonna shift gears, but I want to explain. You already know this, so this won't be any news to you. wanted to just explain to the audience why Pittsburgh is the best franchise in the NFL since, I mean, right now, and why it's not really, I can't say it's not even close, but really it's just, it's clear cut, puts you that way.
Mm-hmm.
Amongst many fans around the league and around the NFL, everybody would just automatically point to the New England Patriots. And the Patriots have done great things. What they did this year was just amazing because there's no Brady and a bunch of, a host of injuries as far as to their defensive players
right.
and running backs. And what they've done since 2001, and it's been great. I'm not taking anything away from it. But since 1970, and anybody wants to look this up, you can go to the Sports Almanac online. Trust me, the information is available. Since 1970, which was the time the NFL had the merger, of course, no AFL, NFL combined, Pittsburgh has made the playoffs 24 out of 39 years. They've won 5 Super Bowls, this will be, of course, their 7th Super Bowl appearance. They've had 4 straight decades where they've at least made 1 conference championship appearance, 3 head coaches in 40 years. And I asked before, of course, 1970, but I'm tossing that in as well. And I'm looking at these, and you know, these 14 conference championship appearances. It might be more than that. I think it's more than that. Conference championship appearances. It might be like 17. So I have to write that number down for some reason. But you look at, I mean, it's just been no comparison. I mean, I was looking at other franchises, what they've done, and I had New England right there. I had San Francisco, Dallas, San Francisco. You know, some franchises, and I'm taking this from 1970 and beyond. And at least I'm looking at all those franchises, and there was at least some point where all those franchises have had a dead period in their, in a particular decade. I mean, in New England in the 70s was not a non-factor. San Francisco was a non-factor in the basically 2000s and also the 70s. Dallas has been a non-factor this decade and also the 80s. And the Giants really didn't do much in the 70s. So, to me, it's not even close. I mean, they have been, even if they don't win a Super Bowl tomorrow, they are the premier franchise in terms of stability and in terms of winning. They have the most wins since that time period. They had the highest win percentage since in that time period. They're second in playoff wins. So, ladies and gentlemen, they are the best franchise in pro football. As far as they drafting, as far as how they draft, they do not overpay guys. You don't see them do a pull of Washington Redskins and pay, you know, signed a 1996 Pro Bowl team in the year 2000. So they are, to me, the clear-cut best franchise in the NFL right now. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know if I can even do much better than that, Cyril. What are you? Are you getting paid? I mean, my God, that was fantastic. No,
I wish I was getting paid.
Yeah, I know, right? Don't we all? But, you know, I think that you are absolutely correct, and I think that class, and of course, people talk about that all the time, of this organization, of
the first class
family, is pretty well. It's pretty well displayed on every single thing that they do. You know, my husband is familiar with the Rooney family. Their families know each other, and you know, he went out, and this is just a little story. He went out, I don't know how, he must have been 10 years old, so this is going back a good 20, 25 years, and he helped Art Rooney, the chief, okay, the senior, Art Rooney senior
uh-huh.
here, Dan's father.
That's all right.
He helped his brother or somebody who was running for judge and here in Pittsburgh and, like, passed out pamphlets or something like that, and one day he got a package in the mail. And he opens it up, and it's a football saying to Jason Kaufman, "You are a superstar, the Art Rooney Sr., the Chief."
Wow.
And he gave him this football, signed it, put all the Super Bowl, all the Roman numerals on it. You know, everyone's very proud here in Pittsburgh of the Steelers. And that's just like one little story. And there's many of them. There's many of them like that. They live literally 2 blocks from Heinz Field still, in an area that isn't necessarily the best area in the city. But they still live there in a gorgeous brownstone. And they would walk. They don't anymore. But he would walk to the stadium and hand out tickets to kids.
Mm.
And so that's where this is all coming from. That's where
the Steelers and how they do business, that's the root of it all. It's just, it's you know, it's knowing what when to spend your money, like you were saying.
Oh,
knowing when you just let go of players. I mean,
right.
If you're looking at people like, you know, letting go of Greg Lloyd, letting go of Joey Porter at the right time. I mean, obviously, he had a breakout season this year. I mean, who thought that
would happen? They knew what they were doing.
Right, and they had people to step in, and they're always doing that.
Absolutely.
You're right, in the draft. They're always drafting. They're always making the right moves, and they're never making big splashes in the free agent market. And they do it, and everything just seems to work together. Everyone is able to buy in to what the Steelers are selling in terms of players.
Right.
I think they hold their heads high, and they let all the garbage roll off their backs. They don't get involved with any drama queens or no TOs or Chad Johnson
at all.
And that's able, and that makes them able to do what they need to do. I think they feel like people should be honored to play for the Steelers.
Absolutely.
And because of their sustainability over the years, I mean, they're just something that you can count on, like you're saying, you know, 24 out of 39 seasons going to the bottom. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
and so, and the fans hold them to a high standard as well, as does the media here. So they know their expectations every year is Super Bowl or bust. And we actually have here polls saying that if the Steelers lose a Super Bowl, is this season all lost? I mean, those kind of things. And you're sitting there thinking, and for me, who I didn't grow up here, but I'm sitting here going, you know what, 30 other teams would do whatever they needed to do to be in this position. So that's what they're under that pressure every single year. But they handle it, again, so well with class, with dignity, which is really important. And, you know, they continue to do a good job year in and making the right decisions. I think, like, you're right. I mean, they're hiring Tomlin, who was, like, an unknown in Minnesota. I mean, really. I mean, for me, we're like, who the hell is Mike Tomlin?
Right. You know? I did not. I'm telling you, and I watched. I'm all over the NFL. I heard the name, but I did not. He wasn't one of these hot assistants. I was like, well, he's going to have a job, like a Steve Spagnuolo was this year, and a couple other guys I can name, Rex Ryan. So, yeah, that was just,
yeah.
That kid, I knew it wasn't her. I thought it was going to be wasn't her Russ Grimm. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, we thought here. I think a lot of people thought it would end up being Russ Grimm. I think with his knowledge, I mean, being one of the Hogs, you know, he's familiar
right,
with that.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm very familiar.
And so it's a, and he's, you know, he's up for the Hall of Fame. They always say you don't know if you can get all the Hogs in to the Hall of Fame.
No, I mean, three of them should get in. I don't think all of them should get in. Russ Grimm should have been in the Hall of Fame. I don't know how he's not. Russ Grimm is absolutely a Hall of Famer. There's no question about it. But, you know. Those things tend to work themselves out. But yeah, the Steelers have, like, to me, I think that separates them is I look at some of these other teams. I look at, like, the proud franchises, like the great run New England's having right now, the great run San Francisco had. New England, I want to see, and then again, I want to see New England. I'm not picking on New England, but they are, you know, they are near at the top, like with Pittsburgh. But I want to see New England survive without Brady and Belichick. What happens when Brady gets old and can't play no more, retires, and Belichick retires? Then what? That's when the true test will show to me in terms of their, you know, stability. Because Pittsburgh went through no Bradshaw, went through Cowher with Cordell Stewart and Neil O'Donnell. I mean, geez, you can make it a Super Bowl with Neil O'Donnell as your quarterback. You have a great franchise.
Yeah,
and he went through, and now Roethlisberger and Tomlin. So they won through three or four quarterbacks and three coaches, just only three coaches in 40 years. And they would have won. How they were that good with Cordell Stewart. He was good at Flash, but you put him in a quarterback role, he cost you a couple of AFC championships.
Oh, I know.
Oh, my goodness. But how they were able to have that great of run with him and Neil Donald just shows you just how solid and the rest of the franchise was, the rest of the franchises. I mean, me and my friend were discussing all the time, they have a philosophy. We run, we stop the run, and we're physical as any team in the league. To me, that's just a philosophy that hasn't been changed in 40 years. It hasn't changed.
Right, and when they try to change it, it doesn't necessarily work out. You know, I mean,
No.
This year's the only year when they've Roethlisberger's 7-2 this year when you're throwing over 30 more times a game. So in his career before that, he has not been successful when doing that. And so this is one of the first times when they've actually been able to give Roethlisberger the keys to the truck and say, hey, drive us to victory, you know, and he's been able to do that because, honestly, when Willie Parker was hurt with his knee, when he came back, you know, Mwelde Moore is a fantastic guy. I mean, he did some amazing things early in the season when Willie Parker first got hurt, you know, but he is a backup. I mean, he's kind of been that way his career. But Willie Parker, when he came back, was very tentative on his knee. I don't know if you could see or watch any of the regular season games.
No, he wasn't. Well, he wasn't. He went from fast Willie Parker to slow Willie Parker.
Yeah, I mean, he would, like, he couldn't make his cuts. He would always fall. I mean, he would fall. I would think to myself, what the heck? Yeah, you know, what are you doing? Didn't you see that hole? You know, I mean, oh God. And so, they had a little like blip in terms of their running game this year. But Roethlisberger was able to, you know, use Heath Miller more. There's Matt Spaeth, who's another tight end that a lot of people may not know about, but he stepped up and did a great job as well this year. So, you know, they were forced to get away a little bit from their running game, but because of their unbelievable defense, you know, it wasn't a big deal. No problem, you know, okay, yeah, you know.
It's
no biggie. And another big loss, I talk about this a lot on my show, it was Daniel Sepulveda. I never know if it's Sepulveda or Sepulveda. My husband was like, it's Sepulveda. But it's, you know, Daniel Sepulveda. I always say Sepulveda, so I'll just go with that. But Daniel Sepulveda, you know, a lot of teams snickered and laughed in the press here in Pittsburgh when they took him in a fourth-round pick 2 years ago. But he is a machine for, you know, for getting the punt in the 10-yard line or less or inside the 20. He is really amazing at doing that. So he was like a special weapon on special teams that they used all the time. And he broke his leg in a preseason game. And that was a huge – I mean, look at this Mitch Berger guy. I mean, my God. I don't know if
you know. Mitch Berger has – he once was one of the top punters, but listen, he's an old man. He's an old man.
Not
anymore, though. That day is done. This is going,
oh, my God. And then they had Paul Ernster. First they had Mitch Berger, and they had Paul Ernster, and they went back to Mitch Berger because they couldn't choose between, you know, worse and worser.
Exactly.
I mean, it was terrible. It's like, pick your poison here. And so – for them to come out of this, and then again, playing, and obviously this has been talked about a ton, playing one of the toughest schedules in NFL history.
Yeah, that's
pretty amazing. This season is pretty amazing for them.
It's funny how you bring that up, because I probably scrapped that part of my program where I was going to go through their the roles that these two teams get. And I'll do that a little bit, too. I'm looking at this run that they had, and to me, this is where their season, this is where Pittsburgh, to me, they kind of helped get them to this point. They had a run. They lose to the Giants, which is a game that they easily could have won if it wasn't for that.
James Harrison having to do the freaking the long snapping.
Yeah, long snapping. Yeah.
Yeah, they long snapped out of the end. I couldn't believe it.
They lose
to
the Giants.
Oh my God.
They beat Washington when Washington was actually good. Washington was 6-2 at the time, right before the election, of course. They lose a tough game against Indianapolis at home. They beat San Diego, Cincinnati, at New England, Dallas, Baltimore. They lose to Tennessee, which I thought the game they looked tired in that game myself.
Yeah, yeah.
That run, I mean that stretch of games, they went 6-3 in that stretch of games, and I said at that point, I'm like, this team, you know. Yeah, this team could definitely win a championship. That schedule, I looked at the schedule this year. I said, Pittsburgh would be good this year, but their schedule is just ridiculous. The schedule is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was counting on, counting on Cleveland to be better, you know. But that's
absolutely.
What I thought.
After a 10-6 record,
right,
you would think Cleveland would have been better. But
yeah,
hey.
But they're Cleveland for a reason. They are Cleveland.
Hey, that rhymes. That's a good one. Yeah.
They're Cleveland
for
a reason.
And but, it was definitely tough. You know, everyone had a high expectation of the Texans as well, right? I mean, their opening season.
They improved, actually. Yeah,
they improved. And that looked like a better win later on
right.
in the season. But, yeah, the Eagles and Ravens and, of course, the Jaguars who beat them in the
right.
first round
right.
of the playoffs
yeah.
last year at home. You know, it just really – in the way that the NFC East was supposed to come out, I mean, Dallas kind of stunk it up. I mean, Dallas should have won that game.
Oh, Dallas
yeah.
stole that game. Dallas outplayed them. They stole that game. But
that,
you know,
that
NFL.
Game, let me tell you what, that game is the epitome of the Dallas Cowboys season.
Oh,
I mean, not
goodness,
to switch
yeah.
gears and talk about them, but if anybody else has ever listened to my show, and I don't know if you know this, but I was brought up a Dallas Cowboys fan. So,
oh goodness,
this makes for fun. I know, absolutely not. But this makes for fun dinner conversations between my husband and I, of course, when we're talking about two of the three franchises that have the most Super Bowls. You know, right?
Right.
So. We're talking about that, and there's always, you know, contention, and we're always like when they're playing each other, it's like, well, the all-time record is 51-51, you know, against each other or whatever. And so that game was just, I mean, they had it in the bag, and then it all fell apart. Everybody's
yeah.
like, T.O. stopped running his routes. Jason Garrett, yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I mean, I'm not even going to talk about them anymore. But anyway,
they are a collection. They're a collection. They're not a team. Like they, you know,
right.
And
that's
I think
a good way to put that. Yeah.
And then you know, that's another thing. You compare the organizations. I don't see Dan Rooney on the sideline saying, "Come on, Ben, let's go, Ben. Let's you know pick it up." You know, Jerry Jones, get in the
yeah.
press box and shut up. That's what annoys me as a Redskins fan about Daniel Snyder, because to me he's like a Jerry Jones wannabe. He wants to be in a war room. He wants to be a part of the draft. He wants
right.
to interview coaches. Like, just own, run the business. You make a ton of money off the Redskins. You make the Redskins the second most profitable franchise in the league behind Dallas. Just do that part. Don't stick. Let football people make football decisions. And that's why I love. That's why you have to love guys. That's why you see some of the most successful franchises right now. And I think of the four that stand out between Pittsburgh, New England, Philadelphia, and Indianapolis. They all have football people making football decisions. You know,
right.
You don't have coaches drafting. You have coaches coach, general managers. They do what they do. Scout, and that's scout. And then that's what you know drives me crazy about the Redskins. When you have Vinny Serrato, who's an absolute figurehead. I mean, I compare him and Daniel Snyder. They're like Mr. Burns and Smithers. That's who they are to me. they're a joke. And like you have to have football people making football decisions in Dallas. And I was listening right before I got real early, of course, to do this program. But Bob Costas had on talking about Jeff Perlman, who was writing about Dallas in the early to mid 90s, and just talking about how they, you know, the Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson dynamic and how that went down. And, Dallas has not been the same since that. And the only reason they've gotten back to somewhat respectability is because Bill Parcells drafted Tony Romo, Terrence Newman, Jason Witten. So when you let Bill Parcells do his thing, then Bill Parcells left because Tony Romo, didn't want to deal with RTO. That's just plain and simple. You got to have football people making football decisions.
Well, and Parcells, when, you know, obviously he builds teams on defense. And actually, with Tony Romo was actually undrafted, but was known by offensive coordinator there, Sean Payton, when he was there before he went over to the Saints, because they went to the same school. However, you know, when you build a team upon defense, it really tends to work out well. And you're right, Jerry Jones just wants to make the splash,
yeah.
and that's not
yeah.
how success
wow.
is built. At all. I mean, you have to, just like with that, and that's why people love the Steelers, because, you know, you put your nose to the grindstone and you just work it, you work and work and work. You don't just throw money around and then assume that people bring their talent to the table and everything meshes. I mean, that locker room is so divided, and they're even bringing up and questioning, a racial divide there. Now,
wow.
In addition to everything,
that's the last thing they need.
That's the last thing. If you notice, Jason Garrett oh my God, I can't believe his name is escaping me. Obviously, there's Witten, Cody Romo. Jason Witten, thank you. Holy cow, yeah. Jeez, they're so far from my mind. They have their little thing going on. And you notice any time that they're talking about, or the media, of course, and the media plays this stuff up so much, and I put a little blame on that. But they wouldn't be sniffing around if there was nothing to smell. You know, I mean, there's something going on there. And you have T.O. and Terrence Newman and all the other, you know, and the African-American players there too, kind of getting together. You notice that they were the defensive players there were supporting T.O. And it just seemed to be, I noticed that and I thought, no, this cannot be happening in addition to everything else. And I just really feel that this is something that it's like irreconcilable differences. I mean, there's a divorce that needs to happen here somewhere. But they need to take a page out of the Steelers' book and realize that that's not how champions are built it's not. It's built through off-season workouts. It's built through camaraderie. It's built through trust. And no one on that team trusts each other.
No. I mean, it's like 53 players and 53 different calves. I mean, you build a team. Like, if I'm building a team, I want, first, give me the franchise quarterback. That's obviously where you start. But you can't get the franchise quarterback, and those are hard to come by. Sometimes you stumble into one, like the Patriots did with Tom Brady.
Right. Yeah.
But you build it inside out. I mean, you go the lines of scrimmage, you go offensive line, defensive line, and go from there. I think the most important unit on the team is your offensive line, because I've seen great defenses shut people down, but their offenses just not be able to score, and you know, the team's not making the playoffs. So I think your offensive line probably is the most important unit on your team, other than of course the quarterback. So that's how you come in terms of building a franchise. And speaking of the offensive line, and it goes to show you just how great the Steelers defense has been. If their offensive line, I've been kind of confused by this, because I know Ben Roethlisberger in particular, he's been sacked more times in the last 4 years than any 5 years than any quarterback in the league, and he got hit a lot. Is it more of a product of the offensive line being not that good, or is it more of a product of him holding on to the ball too long?
You know what? The offensive line this year has been porous. I mean, really has. I mean, I've seen Max Starks, this guy, is getting way over. They franchised him. And he is he's so frustrating to watch because he's massive. I mean, this guy could be good if he just knew how to move his body. And he knew how to get off get off the ball faster. They're always good for a few false starts, too. Marvell Smith, when he was playing, he's always good. Willie Colon, I mean, just chalk it up, kind of like Flozell Adams for the Cowboys. Just chalk up a false start every single game and in the most inopportune times. They're just... I just don't think they're fast enough on their feet, and they get blown by a lot of times. He was sacked what, like 46 some odd times this year. That is ridiculous, and it's just and he was rushed, I'm sure, plenty more times, and he has to hold on to the ball. You know, that's the reason why he makes plays, because he's always got somebody in his face. So he's always running around and trying to make something happen. I believe wholly that the offensive line is to blame for that, and for him doing that and getting into the routine of holding on to the ball very long. But that, you know what, that's Roethlisberger's game. I mean, that's what he does.
Yeah, that's what he does. I mean, it's a gift and a curse, but that's what he does. That's what he does.
Yeah, he's best when he's playing playground football. And you know what's interesting? One of the Chargers, I think one of the Chargers defensive linemen said this, or no. Oh, no, it wasn't one of the Chargers. It was, I think, Trevor Price, actually, from the Ravens. He said, you know, my advice to the Cardinals is just don't rush Roethlisberger. Just don't rush him.
That wouldn't be the worst. I mean, you wouldn't do that the whole game, but I think you have to mix it up. I mean, you have to do something to mix it up. Make him make accurate throws, make him make plays without, I mean, that's not the worst, you know, make him be an accurate quarterback. Make him prove to me that he can go 68%, 69% and do that in terms of accuracy, in terms of a completion percentage. Make sure you keep him he's not a scrambler per se in the level of like Michael Vick type. That he's not going to run away from people. But he can move enough. he can get you some tough yards. But that's not the worst thing I've heard. I mean, that's a very good point I had not thought about. I'm going to make this prediction, and then I just want you to take this home with me. As far as I get a people's my prediction on this game, I know that if people have listened to the program, listened to the past couple, they probably know what I'm leaning towards. I think it would be a very good game. I really do. I think Pittsburgh certainly deserves to be a 7-point favorite. But I'm just looking at history. I'm looking at the fact. I think both quarterbacks will play relatively well. But a couple things I had to just go by. Number one, since 1970, and go back to 1970, 15 times a team has entered the Super Bowl with the number one defense. They're 13-1 in those Super Bowls. A team that's entered the Super Bowl with the number one defense has never lost to a team with number one offense. Of course, Arizona doesn't have the number one offense, but again, defense normally wins out in these situations. And I just think that I think Warren has to be great for Arizona to win this game. And I don't think he can be great against this defense. I mean, this defense is that good. If Roethlisberger plays average, Pittsburgh can win this game. So I think there's definitely more room for error for Pittsburgh than it is for Arizona. I like Pittsburgh to say 31-21. Again, I think it would be very competitive. I'd be shocked if it's a blowout. I just think that I don't think that the talent gap is that big. And I think Arizona has earned my respect with the way they've handled Carolina and Philadelphia. I do think they can handle Pittsburgh as far as physically. I don't think Pittsburgh will push them around per se. I think they're a little tougher than people think. But I like Pittsburgh. Well, I'd be shocked if Arizona won. No, you can't. After last year, you can't be shocked if anybody wins a Super Bowl after what you saw, New England and the Giants. But I will be a little surprised if Pittsburgh doesn't win this one. I just think I can see them hanging in three quarters, and I can see Pittsburgh get a key turnover in the fourth quarter, or Roethlisberger make a play in the fourth quarter, and then win a 10-point game, that type of ordeal. But again, if Arizona is able to pull this off, it'd be one of the greatest individual accomplishments by a quarterback. Maybe one of the best stories in NFL history, because this team, there's no way. I've seen them get knocked around by the Jets, killed by the Eagles. Minnesota came into their house and blew them out late in the year. And there's no way that this team, I would ever think that this team would be at this point close to 60 minutes away from a Super Bowl.
And you know what? You can't forget about the Patriots pounding them into the
ground. Oh my goodness! I wanted to do that. I didn't want to torture their fans, but half the team was on the bus. Half the team was on the bus. The other half was by the heaters.
that was really crazy. And the reason obviously I like the Steelers in this game, for more than one reason. But looking at the information that we have, in that NFC Championship game, I think that the Cardinals were just amped in the beginning. If you see, they scored most of their points in the first half. Larry Fitzgerald, three touchdowns first half.
Right.
And then they let the Eagles get back into it. Their defense is not that good.
It's not championship defense.
They gave up 424 yards to the Eagles. And that's
McNabb
when
was not accurate.
Get back in the game. Right.
Yeah,
right. I mean, so there is a lot of, and I really believe that nationally, at the scope of this nationally, people underestimate the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. You know what? When they're running on all cylinders, they can
put
some
points
out.
Yeah, they can put some
really
points on the board.
They can do a good job. I mean, they've got big playability. Nate Washington, and Santonio Holmes over the top have been huge. Ward, of course, makes the amazing plays. He will make an amazing play in this. I would put a lot of money on it. I mean, whether it's some kind of catch over the middle in traffic and then some really tough yards, give somebody a stiff arm and go into the end zone,
I think
he's going to do it, because he also is one of those people that thrives on people saying, you can't do this. I mean, that's what he heard, his entire
his whole career.
Yeah.
He's done that his whole career.
Yeah, he's got no cartilage in his knee. He's never had cartilage in his knee. And so, you know, this is going to be interesting to see what he does. But I just believe that the Steelers' defense is just going to be too much. I think their rush is going to get in Warner's face and it make him uncomfortable. And he's very accurate and he gets the ball out quick. But I think the Steelers, and yeah, Ken Whisenhunt has coached against or with Dick LeBeau and against him.
Vice versa as well.
And yeah, that's exactly right. So I just feel like the Steelers have more going for them, that the Cardinals were just so excited and they had emotions and they were riding them in the beginning of that NFC Championship game, first ever in Arizona. And I just think that I don't want to say they're glad to be here, but I just feel like that could happen again.
That could happen, really excitement
and all that stuff. That the Steelers are a fourth quarter team as well. I mean, you would never count them out. They had four come from behind fourth quarter last minute drives to win the season. So I think the Pittsburgh is. I also think they're going to win by about a 10-point margin. I don't think it's going to be as many points. I was thinking that around the 27-17.
I think
that Pittsburgh is going to come out on top as well.
Well, Stacey, thank you for coming on and for this last hour. You have made this program. You've taken the Saturday morning wake up call to a new level with coming on. And I definitely appreciate that for you coming on. I would definitely. Monday night, I'd like to return the favor and talk post Super Bowl with you. If that'd be fine with you, thank you for calling me, and I will definitely get back with you. I would like to thank Stacey for coming on to the Saturday morning program, and enjoy the game.
All right, bye bye.
All right, take it easy, folks. I will see you tomorrow. I will see you next week. Wow, 2 hours.